Well, episode 2, are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's get to it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to season one, episode two of the Indie Book Club, our Thomas Was Alone series, the finale of Thomas Was Alone. I am Graydon Webb, joined today by Alan Muir. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling well. Yesterday, yesterday I took a little trip. So let's just say that. I took a little trip to Sleepland.
Yes, I read a bit about that. Was it a good one?
Oh yeah, it was not a bad trip. I'll simply leave it at that. It's not a bad trip.
Good. Speaking of indie games, have you ever heard of One Way Trip?
Sounds familiar.
It was around like mid PS4 generation, and it might have been free with PS Plus. I've thought about having it as an IBC game, but I was like, my thoughts on it, it felt like somebody tried to make something akin to Clerks in a way that's just like weird, like early 20s, like odd stoner comedy type thing. But the biggest issue with it, the art style is pretty cool, but my biggest issue is that the background noise, like the music, is just an absolute mess. I highly recommend looking it up and just seeing what it looks like, because it's just like sketches and drawings, but it's the music is so bad, and I can't bring myself to play that game any longer.
So it's not like a Garden State thing where it's like lo-fi music, but instead of lo-fi, it's actually like just really trash.
I've honestly never seen Garden State, so I don't know exactly the reference there, but it's not lo-fi. It's like, hey, we're gonna pretend to make like grunge, just yelling and whining and
new metal.
That might be it. from what I remember, at least, it was like that, and it was just like I had to turn that shit down because it's a visual novel basically, but the you're just hearing that the whole time, and it's just not fun.
You're trying to read and everyone is just Fred Dursting it.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, you have Limp Bizkit on and you're trying to read, I was gonna say like Moby Dick or something, but that is not the level of literature we're talking here. Even trying to read a comic book with Limp Bizkit in the background would be rough, I feel. But we are here for something different, something that is not exactly very literature heavy, but narration heavy, but story heavy. And I do mean heavy, because the ending of Thomas Was Alone is, you know, I'll kick it off with this question for you, because I remember saying that this game led me to cry, and it didn't this time. In fact, when I finished it, I was like, is that really the ending? And I had to go and look it up. I like went and looked up another video, and I was like, maybe, because I know there's a Flash version of this game, maybe there was some disconnect there. But no, this is the same ending across the board, it seems. And I didn't love it as much. And I loved the adventure, the journey. You and I have some history, especially the Quarry, talking about games that where the adventure is better than the ending. And I feel this is definitely still worth playing. But that ending didn't bring me to feel that super hard emotion. So my question for you is, how did it affect you when you put that controller down?
So when I was going through that main level, I wasn't sure what to make of it because it felt very... Okay, this is going to be very hard to explain. It made me feel like I was rewatching the Dragon Ball GT ending, like the ending to that series.
Okay, in what regard?
Like in a matter of sense that there's a sense of finality.
Mm-hmm.
And that last level was truly something else, like truly transcendent.
The last level with the two characters, or the last level with like our whole group of characters?
The last level with the two characters.
Okay. Yeah, there is something. I mean, we'll get to it with the synopsis, but there's something about it that feels very... It's almost like you really experience that shift between like what you're leaving behind and what's blossoming. And that's really cool. Like you really feel like you're a part of that in a way. I personally felt more emotion with our cast of characters that we know. And the last time we see them.
Oh like yeah. And we then switched to different characters.
Right. And there's definitely a reason behind that. And you can tell that while the story shifts, there's a reason why we're seeing these new people and you can get behind them enough, but you're not with them for the same amount of time. So you don't have this history that grows with them. And so there's just this, like you said, the finality. You really feel that in the end when you have of the Thomas group.
Yeah.
Where you
of the main players.
Yeah, the main players, your main protagonists. You really feel that ending for them. And I think that it's done really well, that tonal shift. So let me see. I think it might be good to just jump into our story, if you're cool with that.
Thomas looked at the glowing beam. That list he'd been writing seemed pretty petty now. This was all knowledge. All of it. Right in front of him.
So, we shall begin with what was chapter... Oh, I gotta do the math. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. This was 5. Chapter 5. Called Invert. It begins with the quote, "They saved Thomas and set him on the path to his destiny," which I felt was like a good culmination of like just everybody had come together now and this was really where the story was going to take off and you were going to figure out what everyone was there for. James appears. James is a, you had said, vermilion green rectangle with the ability to perform inverted. He had been eaten by the pixel cloud and put in a cage. James enjoys being alone. He later meets up with Thomas and they work together. I also have James is called weird. So, yeah. I mean, that's kind of it for that chapter. You're introduced to James. He's, I believe, our last. No, he's not our last. There's one more character, I think, that we meet. And you thought going into this chapter in our last episode that you might like him and the way that he works. Did you find yourself getting to feeling the same way as you were playing as him?
So I enjoyed the stuff like his part, like everything he was a part of. There's a certain puzzle where you have to invert in order to get through. To get through the level, and for the longest time, I was just looking at my PC, just going like, "What does it want me to do?" And instead, I realized that I have to. It's all in the name. It's all in the chapter name. Invert. You gotta invert what would normally be done, and that was it. And I'm still having those. Like, you know that meme of the person's asleep and their brain says, "Hey, you still awake?" And just says something that then just they're shocked, like they're alarmed and they're just up for the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm. You're getting shocked to shocked awake by the memories of James?
More along the lines of getting shocked awake by how I wish there could be more puzzles with James, because it was actually my favorite. James was not my favorite character, but he was my favorite
puzzle device.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is weird with Thomas Was Alone in general that there's no, like, challenge mode. There was never any, like, arcade mode, as far as I know. And it just, you didn't have, like, a lot of room to explore with these characters. I did find that there were some really cool puzzles, and it was reminding me of that game D-Leveled. Do you remember that one?
That definitely sounds familiar.
I know that Emmett was singing its praises once, I think because of a Steam demo. He might have done it in a NextFest demo video. And you know what? I feel like, and I'll take this out if it's wrong, but I feel like a developer reached out to him and maybe gave him a code for it. But it, like, it was, it's one of those, like, shapes, one side reflects the other.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the game on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Master Momentum and this unique jumping game that features no jump button.
Has no jump button. So what am I thinking? Is it like gravity shifting? Something about it. I remember it's like, it's just one of those things where one side affects the other and it's like along a single plane. And that kind of puzzle solving was very reminiscent of this James segment. Did you find, like, I remember you said that you had a list of, like, challenge levels. Was any one of them that one of the ones where you had to invert and then kind of, I don't know how to describe it. You had to, like, jump onto each other and then shuffle along your the gravity.
Yeah, that was actually, at first, the first one of those I got stuck on.
Okay.
But once I saw what I had to do, it's mainly why I was thinking of all the different possibilities of what could be done with, like, if they just had that type of system.
Yeah, it's very unique, and there are other games kind of like it that do a similar thing, but that's just such a, I guess that's the opposite of unique, isn't it? But it's very novel, a very novel idea that you don't see a lot of in puzzles. And I remember when that first one happened, I was like, oh, like your respective, the person on the top and the first person on the bottom, their respective jumps have to wrap around each other so that they're causing each other's gravity to, like, shift. And it was just genius. Like, it's really, really crazy how that worked.
I have the list of levels I struggled with.
Yeah. Any in chapter 5 that you have written down there?
Just one. Level 10.
Level 10. I'm going to pull these up. Oh my God, it's right in the middle. I'll pull these up just so I can kind of follow along and maybe describe it. Oh, okay, this is what I was thinking of. So it's exactly what we were just saying, where you have to, like, shuffle along, but then you have to, like, jump. One side has to jump to make it through the gaps. You're doing this, like, weird suspended Flappy Bird thing. And yeah, it's super crazy. Like, if you've played it and you know the way that I'm talking, you can kind of picture a level that looks like this, but you're just kind of getting through these gaps and you really just have to shuffle along on top of your partner. And it's just crazy. It's mind bending. It's one of those weird little mind bending puzzles.
And I wish there was more of them.
Yeah, I definitely wish there was more. I wish there was some kind of challenge mode, because that kind of thing really changed the game. Let me see if there's anything. All right, so we'll move on to chapter 6. Here I have written a little bit more. So chapter 6, iterate. Sarah appears, able to double jump, and she thinks the boy's struggle is humorous. She seeks the Fountain of Youth, the place through which all days flowed. Sarah is quite full of herself, believing she could do all this on her own, as if she was born to be something better. She even refers to Thomas as a lesser. Sarah knew the next level would bring the fountain, but when they arrived, she couldn't make it in. Thomas knew the jump into the beam took Thomas took the jump into the beam of all knowledge. 12 seconds. Oh, this is where I have my bullets. That's why I'm stumbling. I'm so sorry. But he was in there for 12 seconds, it says, and he learned everything that the internet had to offer. He could then
This area was, I loved it because it just, it was such a great way to break the fourth wall.
It was. I was going to ask you about that, but you, yeah, keep going.
So, basically, just pop culture references from over a decade ago. about the cake being a lie, and
arrow in the knee. That's the other one.
And not it wasn't the fact that it wasn't just pop culture reference, but the fact that there was a bit of like unsureness about the fact that there was confusion as to what any of this was. From Thomas's perspective, was a really, really brilliant move.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, you were watching an AI grow, in a way. And it was really where we kind of started to see... I mean, obviously, we've been following these characters. They've had names, they've had personalities. But you're really seeing, like, they are waking up and realizing, oh, we can be more. There's more out there for us. So, like, you feel like you're learning alongside them. And I mean, like you had said, the references were a bit dated, but at the time they were, I mean, probably annoying, but funnier.
They've aged well. All of them have aged well since then, like Arrow to the Knee, Kink is a Lie.
Nathan Fillion.
Which I love that. I love that one so much.
That'll catch you off guard because I love the level just starts with him being like, Thomas knew he'd never meet Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, it's just simply doing like just taking that shot of, well, we're just gonna name drop the modern day at the time, Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, nerd's biggest name. The biggest name in geekdom at the time. Yeah, it was funny.
And the thing is, other games would lean more into it. But they just, it's a little bit. A little bit of pop culture stuff, and then they move on.
Right. It doesn't have to be too meta. Like, there's something later on about, like, cat references or some cat jokes, but it's not...
Oh, yeah, about Keyboard Cat.
Yeah, but it's not, like, in-your-face ridiculous. It's just like, hey, very the internet subtle. Exists. Yeah, the internet exists. This is what they saw. It's funny because that's what you would see at the time, and then it moves on.
Thomas was connected to the internet for 12 seconds, and he had seen everything. He'd seen the cats who couldn't spell, he'd heard of the arrow through the knee. He felt there was probably a thing called cake, but that it was a lie.
Yeah, there's no feeling of overstaying its welcome. And yeah, I end up surprisingly, I didn't really have any trouble with this chapter.
Really? Because you said that you liked Sarah. Did you like her as a character or as a puzzle device?
Both. the way she would, despite, just to carry over from the last episode, they're shapes. No voice. There's no voices. They're just shapes. They're defined by their actions. So, at a certain point, I had you have to jump, or do a bit of a lowest, smallest, tallest.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain points where I just simply switch over to Sarah, jump around, like jump, basically just go all the way to the end of the level, and realize that, oh wait, no, I'm not supposed to do this because that's not how the puzzle works.
Mm-hmm.
And then in moments like that, you realize, wow, I really am in the shoes of this character.
Right, and you're really forced to rely on your team. I mean, I think there was a level we talked about in the last episode where you were given the option to work it out in multiple different ways. And John, being the tall, I can jump the farthest one, was able to just bound to the end if he wanted to. Or you can keep him there and have him help other people along. And I think you see that with like the puzzles that are just steps, and you can get someone to the end, but then there's, I don't know, Claire down at the bottom who can't jump very high, can't jump very far. And you have to, like, everyone relies on each other. So I like what you're saying about Sarah there. Like, she's got the ability to get there, but then you're leaving everyone behind and you're like, well, I got to go work as a team. I got to bring my team along with me.
Yeah, overall, it's just a stellar, truly stellar chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really good. It was very good. I did have two questions. One, I can kind of make them one question. Did you notice that these levels, I know that you just said that you never really got stuck on these ones, but the levels in general, I was finding they were getting to be longer, and you would have some more checkpoints in the middle, and sometimes you would have like fail states, which wasn't really a thing for the first few chapters. But I felt like I got to these points where I was like, well, I fucked myself. Like, already I can't get back there, and I have to do this again. Did you find yourself at all in the game, like even in later chapters, having those moments?
Yeah, definitely. There's a certain one. Are some of these introduced in chapter 7 or chapter 8?
These challenging ones? I think there are some in 7. Because, like, anytime that there's, like, falling, like, if someone's gonna fall a good distance and they can't really get back up, then if you haven't fallen in the right way, you're pretty screwed there. There are parts where you, in the later chapter, in, like, the final chapter or two, when you start having like the different abilities, kind of like the portal gels.
Yeah, that's one thing I realized. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, you kind of just make your own character at that point with the, as we'll explain, kind of like the essence of your original protagonists. And in doing that, there are ways you can just screw it up, and then you got to start again. And that was pretty crazy to me, especially when it's like, oh, this person can go in water, this person can jump, oh, I've already used the wrong person in the wrong gel. Gotta do it again.
So in particular, the ones that I had trouble with, I think it was the two levels, 7.2 and 7.5.
7.2. Let's see. What is this one I'm looking at? Because this was one I wanted to talk about. Are we on 7 or are we on 6? I don't even remember. Oh, yep. If I'm on the right one here with 7.2, it looks like one of those ones that that spans a long distance. Oh, that's 7.3. No, 7.2. 7.2 is one I was going to bring up. That's the one with the moving end holes. Like the silhouettes that you have to get your shape into at the end of the level, but they moved back and forth. And that I feel is just like an iconic moment from this game to me. Like I saw it and I thought, oh my God, this is that part. So you got stuck with that for a bit?
Yeah, I realized that I didn't know what to do. And I thought, is it my fault?
Yeah, the worst part of that, I remember like I thought I had everything really set up, and then there were two somewhere that were backwards, but then it really felt like not that you had to start the level again, but you had to move other people because some people like you had to work to jump on other characters to get up to different platforms, and yeah, those end lines moved to only two positions. But if that other position that you really have to get with the timing, like you kind of had to decide, do I want to restart everything or do I want to just move everybody collectively to a different position? Because that could make things easier for me. And it was just, it's crazy.
So the very ironic thing, I had everything set up, but ultimately the part that I think I had one or two, like I had three of the five, I had more than half taken care of, and then noticed, oh, I can't do this this way.
Mm-hmm. And it changes your whole idea because you thought that you had it.
Yeah, the one, just to give you a clear example of where the ones I was doing, like the one I was attempting. Having which character was the buoyant square?
Claire.
I'd have Claire, and like there's a spot where it would move to have two like Claire and another character, like it would line up to have just two right next to each other, and it was just aside from those two. I had everything. I pretty much had everything taken care of.
Yep.
And I realized, oh, there's no way to do it this way because, no matter how many times I move Claire over, she will ultimately fall, and there's no room for the other character.
So then you probably got to thinking, well, now I have to move this guy who is in the perfect spot, and I can either bring him down to help this person get up. Or I can just be like, well, screw it. He's going to the other position because it just makes it easier. Yeah, it definitely, it's just one of those puzzles that, I mean, sometimes with Thomas Was Alone, it feels like, oh, we're just going through, we're moving through the level. It's not super turn your brain on and let's think of all these options. It just feels more like, well, we're going through the story, but then it will have these moments where you're like, I forgot I was playing a puzzle game. Okay, I have to step back and I really got to figure this out. And that was one of those big ones. Well, talking about that 7.2 specifically, I guess I'll move on to chapter 7 because we were actually on 6, but 7 is a standout chapter.
Yeah.
And this chapter, known as Design, it starts with this really poignant quote at the top, as I was calling them in the last episode, cutscenes, but they're these little written quotes by supposedly the engineers that were working on the AI and recalling this day in which these events occurred. And so the quote that was there was, "It is fitting that the first act of a sentient AI was an act of selflessness." And I thought that was really sweet. And they then go on to refer to Thomas and the gang as the architects, which I just thought was really cool. Like they then became their own. They were a team with a name, and they. It's interesting those cutscenes. Some of them are a bit more doomerish and like, oh, this is gonna be. It was a bad day. It was a bad thing that happened. And then some of them are just really like, I'm surprised that they were able to do this. So it's just, it's cool to see like these humans that you never see, you never know anything about besides the fact that they were there when this went on. It's like they all have their different reactions to the events of the game. And I think that that's really neat because it brings you into that, it's exposition for a world we don't get to see. So Thomas knows they cannot escape and are permanently trapped thanks to the Pixel Cloud. He informs the others as they meet up. Now this is after, in that last chapter, Thomas jumped into the beam of all knowledge and he could sense that another portal was coming. He meets up with the rest of these of the architects and he, yes, informs them that they're all pretty much trapped there. Claire hopes she can help other AI unaware of their situation. Thomas leads his friends to the Creation Matrix, hoping to redesign the world. He feels if humans can change the world to suit them, why can't they? All of the others have doubt through the levels, but realize their true potential in the end and hope they can use their powers to help the greater good. Thomas enjoys being an architect and is tired of doing puzzles. He can't wait to help those above. James has even come to terms with his own existence and can't wait to save others. He embraces his weirdness. They jump into the Matrix together, one last ride as a team. So, yeah, I mean, like I said in the beginning, this part really stood out to me. You have this long, I believe it's 7.10 or 9, this long level of everybody moving together to get to the end, and then they just kind of sit there all together, and then that's the last we see of them. And I wasn't expecting that next chapter to be like a reset and new characters, but it just felt like, wow, they're like, they're gone, and that's that. It's one of those weird things. You don't really see your main characters quote unquote die mid-game a lot. But yeah, what was your reaction to that?
So honestly, I wasn't expecting that to happen at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was mainly just expecting, because Thomas is the titular character, I was expecting him to be factor into the like the end of the game, and it was an interesting switcheroo.
Yeah, and I think it really speaks to the narrative itself. How, I mean, it's not even the end of the game; it's the end of his story, but quite literally, Thomas is not alone. Like you would think it would end in a way where everybody gets like maybe one by one. I mean, like, because the way with the Pixel Cloud, when it was coming and taking people away, you could think, oh God, it's going to end with like Thomas doing some big feat alone, but he does what he has to do with the help of his friends. And it's just a really nice ending. Not ending that you get for him, and you don't realize it's coming. It's really just out of the blue, and it's just a really nice moment, I feel.
Thomas led his friends to the Creation Matrix, the system which generated the worlds up above. He had a plan. They were going to redesign the world. That's what the humans did. They changed the world to suit them. Why couldn't they do the same?
I don't have a lot of questions for this segment. I suppose I'll just ask you one more thing regarding puzzle devices. In these levels, we see this like diamond that we have to start getting onto platforms. Did that mess you up?
At first it did. I wasn't sure how the physics of it was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But once I started once I realized that I could just roll it to the right or roll to the left, and if there was a ramp or something, like two opposite arcs facing each other, I could just simply like roll it to the point where it would get caught in between both areas. I can just jump up and knock it into the said spot it goes into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had quite a few moments where it was getting stuck for me, and I would have to use either Sarah or, his name is escaping me, but the small orange square, and just kind of get him in there to, because once you push, there's even a part in a level where it knows that if you push the diamond up to like the wall, you're pretty screwed and you have to restart again. So the best thing I could do was like get a smaller character kind of under the side of the diamond to be able to kick it back the other way. And that way you had like a balancing between the two. It definitely messed with me quite a few times, but thankfully there's not a whole lot of diamond action in them. But what was weird is sometimes it took the place of buttons, if I recall correctly. And yeah, you would have to like get the diamond on its platform in order for the next thing to move. And it was just another bit of the level. And that was crazy. Like I said, these levels were longer. Well, with that, we lose the architects, but they live on and are able to help our new protagonist in the next chapter. Shall I move on?
Yeah, because these last two chapters, boy, did I have a terrible time.
Oh, no.
James still felt weird, but he realized now that everyone else was too. They were a crew of weirdos. Weirdness that would save all the normals up above. The other AIs would escape. It would all be down to seven rectangles with very different relationships to gravity.
Well, in chapter 8, titled Generation, we meet gray, just the color gray. I didn't write down their shapes, but they kind of resemble the architects we know. I believe gray is just like John if he were literally gray. So we meet gray. Oh my god. It even says resembles John in bounce. Because yeah, he did have the same jumping that John did. Who is granted some newfound abilities like Claire's. So he becomes buoyant and able to be in the water. We meet Joe and Sam, some new AI. The Shifter grants them new abilities. So we learn about this new thing called the Shifter, which seems to be an entity that they can all kind of feel. And like these are AI. It's weird. This is a weird, like Thomas's group. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say for chapter 8, it feels like it's my only problem with the game.
Mm-hmm.
Is that this? I had trouble following what the story with the narrative thread was between Gray and the good character and the bad character.
Mm-hmm. So it feels like Thomas, the way that he talked about things once he learned information, was that he knew there were AI above. And I don't know if that has to do with like the levels of the way that their system works, or perhaps it just meant like the AI in later generations. But somehow I believe these new characters, there's five of them that we meet in these next two chapters, and I feel like they exist in a similar way to all the other AI, the architects before, where they were just doing their own thing in their own section of the program, and they either meet each other or they don't, they cross paths, however. But they're just doing their own thing. And somewhere they know about this shifter, which may or may not be what the architects left behind, because they do, in a way, I'm trying to remember exactly the wording, but the feeling I get from it is the shifter is what grants them the abilities of the old architects. So I think it just kind of exists in this world of new AI. And they all just exist doing their own thing. But as we'll see, they kind of learn to not have to do their own thing. Does that kind of make it a little easier?
Yeah, kind of. I was happy to see a certain force come back.
Yes, I think I know what you're talking about. Actually, right here. So it says the shifter grants some new abilities. They know the pixel clouds. So is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
So somewhere in this program, these pixel clouds still exist, or maybe there's just one, but it has reared its ugly head again. And
this is actually one of the rare things I remember, because I finished, like, as I said, or as I told you, I finished the game last week.
Yes, as did I.
It's implied that the pixel cloud doesn't, it was, like, the pixel cloud was not, like, it existed, like, it still had existence, but it didn't know, it was confused as to why it was still around, and it just, because it was still around, it still had a purpose. Like, it still had a job to do. So, or at least it's why it does what it does near the end of the chapter.
So it kind of, like, doesn't know its purpose, but it knows it's still here for some reason.
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't recall that vibe, but that makes sense. Because it does indeed have a purpose. So Joe and Sam, they know the pixel clouds. Paul is introduced, an old man who knows about Thomas and his friends' sacrifice. The architects, they call them. Gray grows impatient and selfish and wants this new world for himself. Joe and Sam help him continue, unaware of his betrayal. So I believe Paul and Gray meet and then kind of go their separate ways. And then Gray meets up with Joe and Sam, and Paul, in the next chapter, meets our final new character. But, yeah, I mean, how did you feel? We can throw the next characters in, too, to this question. How did you feel about these new characters?
I really like them.
Yeah, they're introduced and explained in a nice, similar way to the others that I wouldn't have minded spending more time with them, but we really only get about 20 levels with them. So again, you don't have that super, like, that feeling of history with them as the other architects, but I didn't mind them. I thought they were well written.
There's a certain point where I think it's 8.5.
I'll look it up.
There's a, like, and I'll just read the lines that I have. Paul felt it. There was a whisper to the shifters.
Okay.
They had not occurred randomly. They had been created.
So that's him kind of acknowledging what the architects had done?
Yeah. Yeah, Gray listened to the old man. The shifters had been placed in the world by the architects, AIs who sacrifice themselves to fuel their escape.
Okay. So he knows about what's going on and where these powers came from. And I felt like it was a nice little allegory as it goes on that Gray becomes corrupted by this power in a way. Like, he realizes that the shifters grant new abilities, and he just kind of grows mad with that and is like, well, I want to, I don't know if it's exactly if he wants like out of the world, but he definitely wants to control it. And he'll use anyone any way he can. So that's why Joe and Sam kind of fall for his little trap, and they help him near the end. But it definitely, like I said in the beginning, there's this new story growing, and you get to see the consequences of Thomas's group's actions. And I really like that, that it's not just leaving it open-ended with their sacrifice and what could come next. You get to really see what's going to come next.
Yeah, and there's a point in 8.8 where they just say, or it's said that Gray had left the old man behind. He had to get to this exit. He had to be the one to get out a whole world to himself. So,
okay, so he does want out.
He wants out. He wants to take over, I assume.
Yeah. I also had written down, did you catch, there's a part where they say the blind square spoke of curves. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Like, kind of dropping like a possible sequel hint at Curveland. That would be interesting to see more of this with spheres. Because you could do like a whole different thing if they were balls. Like, that would be a whole different puzzler.
Yeah, and then and I think 8.9. Like the next level, he should never have told him. He had to get to the other AIs of the world, warn them about Gray.
Yeah. So he sets out on this journey to tell everyone else about Gray, but unfortunately he gets to Joe and Sam before Paul does. And they set off on their respective journeys into our final chapter of Thomas Was Alone, which is titled Y+1 X+1. So that was a weird change in the naming dynamic, but interesting nonetheless. A little math in there.
Joe and Sam ran. They had no idea where these final portals would lead, but it had to be better than this.
So we are introduced to Team Jump.
Oh, I love these guys.
A five-man team of light gray squares. They meet up with Paul and join forces to stop Gray. Meanwhile, Gray manipulates Joe and Sam into helping him by saying he's trying to find a lost friend. So, I'll just briefly say, Team Jump, you're a fan.
Yeah.
I like the way that they... I totally had forgotten about them. And I like the way that they really rely on that teamwork. Like, they're one character, but they're five characters, and you really got to do a lot of like there's one level where every one of them gets off at a different stop, and you have to get the square up to a certain area, which involves like, again, another level where there's multiple fail states and you have to start over, because if they jump into the wrong shifter at the wrong time, they're not going to be able to double jump, or they're not going to be able to bounce or float or whatever. And it definitely changes. It's a cool little mini puzzle within a puzzle, trying to figure out them as a character. Did you have a moment where you really struggled with them?
I think chapter 9 at part 2, but that was more of the, I kept because there's a big current, like a big air current, that's, I would get pushed into account, like into one of the different power ups or skin changes.
Mm-hmm.
And just die.
Yeah. Yeah, no, especially like if you're like blue and you think that you can swim, and then all of a sudden you get pushed into like red, you're no longer able to swim. looking this one up, that is the level that I was just referencing, and I like that that left an impact on you as well, because it's just one of those long, there's a lot of checkpoints, it's just like puzzle after puzzle in this one level puzzle.
Yeah, there's actually a certain, like, 9.3 was one, another one in particular.
Okay.
Where you have to, there's a big, like there's a big pool of water that you have to, not only have to, you have to get through it, but you have to try to avoid, you have to avoid the power up changes. You have to make sure they don't, you just have to make sure you don't get accidentally powered up, or else you end up starting all the way back.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at that. It's like you really gotta get used to the, like we said in that last episode, with the jumping being kind of floaty, kind of ice skatey sometimes. You really gotta master your jumps by this section and understand, like, there's a bit of a delay, there's a bit of a slide, and then you can get it, but you really wanna be in the right spot with your movement and your jumps and make sure that everything gets where it needs to be.
I did like 9.4.
9.4. Oh, that's the one where there's some inversion again.
Yeah, with Paul and...
Oh yeah, this one. This one was really cool. Because they all had to do their own little things. Some of the balls needed to stay inverted. Some of them needed to stack up at the bottom.
A certain one had to be in a state where they would, you'd have to use that character last, because it's, you have to, in order for everything to work, I think it's Paul. You get the inversion power up, and then you have to drop from. You get the the gray power up,
which cancels it out.
Yeah, so you have to take a faith jump.
Yeah,
and just hope that you aim. Yeah, and it's just like, wow! I can't believe that actually that I was flabbergasted by it. And then 9.5, which is even crazier. Because it introduces the whole premise of inverting, like inversion
and inertia, really.
Yeah.
Like the jumping from a higher height gives you enough inertia to jump to the lower platform. Like, you're just constantly bouncing between inversion and canceling, and the gravity just feels like it's getting turned on and off, on and off. And you have to navigate some platforms and spikes. And it's just really, it's one of those crazy, just mind-bending.
Yeah, it's like, how the hell did they get this right?
Right. Because literally, all of Thomas Was Alone just looks like you threw a bunch of assets into a blender. like none of it really ever feels like it was expertly crafted. But pretty much every platform you're going to touch in some way. It's all there for a reason. And there's multiple levels to go, multiple ways to go about some levels. But all in all, you're going to use it, every bit of that level. It's wild.
So I'm just going to bring this one up because it's actually turned out to be my favorite level of the back half of the game.
Okay, yeah.
9.6.
Let's check that out. Oh, I do remember this. Where you have, like I just said, just a mess of squares. Yeah. And you kind of got to use them to navigate.
Yeah, it's your... You have your Paul and Team Johnny end up in a race against Gray, and at first I was this is just gonna be a common thing for me to say for this. First, I didn't know what to do
Yeah, that's that makes sense. I mean, it's very, it's right off the bat, it's like, I don't really know where to go from here.
Yeah, like there's a certain spot, there's a certain puzzle or the element of a puzzle that I personally really like. Actually, this has my favorite use of the game's physics to handle puzzles. And ironically, they're all the ones involving Team Johnny and Paul. Cuz you have one of the cubes that's to go up and down, up and down, up and down, like a pendulum.
Yes.
Then you have to do a inverted stacking.
Mm-hmm.
There's one, like, and the last one, you have to simply just get it to, or it's actually, I found it to be the easier one, but that's not really, that wasn't really difficult. You simply have to, it's more of like a, like the first option you have, or the first, like the first puzzle that gives you a hint of what you're supposed to be doing. The one where you have to manage to sneak onto the spot where there's two green squares. And the entire time I was doing this, I thought, wait, what goes, this goes here? Does this go here? And then there's a bit of a fake out with Paul,
mm-hmm.
where you're navigating all the different areas, and I had a feeling I knew how this was going to end for Gray, and boy was I happy to see that what ended up happening.
Yeah. Yeah, before I go on to that ending, I just want to say about that level. It was one of those ones that really put on display how Team Jump can be puzzling, because I remember going through it thinking, like, you have to go through it one at a time, but you have these five characters that need to be doing different things, and at some points they rely on each other. So I remember just being like, oh my god, am I going too far? Am I taking him too far? Should I wait here? Like, I had them all scattered across the map because I wanted to make sure I was going to get each puzzle done and not have to restart the level over and over again. So that one was definitely challenging, but it memorable too.
Yeah, I personally chose to have Gray be the last, have him be the last one to finish the
mm-hmm.
just because I don't like, he's a villain.
Yeah, screw that guy.
And there's a moment where it gets a little dark. 9.7.
Hmm.
Sam was worried at how silent Gray had become. He wasn't responding to Sarah to Joe's questions or acknowledging them at all. So he's like, kind of like, I'm glad it didn't get very dark very quick.
Right. It could have screwed it up, especially like
how, pacing and story and all that.
Especially how I feel I know you. You would not have liked it if all of a sudden it was just like, here's like a shape murder out of the blue or something. Like, you have your tone and we can follow the tone nicely, but if it was like this massive shift, it would have ruined the experience. It probably just taken you out of it. And I get that, but I think that like it does it really well, like you're saying, where it gets heavy, it gets like emotional, but you're just kind of like, you're just tense and you're still following that line. And then right as like 9.9, which I'll talk about in one sec, you're like, this is our climax. This is where it's going to get crazy. And then it doesn't, which again, we're talking about shapes. It's so wild to think that, like, it's not like some grand cutscene, but just,
well, I just want to say about 9.7.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really great challenge to to see how the process, like to see how the players' preconceived notion of how to play the game works.
Mm-hmm.
With having the spikes be covering the root, like the ceiling, like the top of the first half, and then inverting it. So like with Sam and Gray, you had to be very careful. Like for the one time, it's ironically the one time that Joe was the one, it was actually the more safer one to control. But kind of, I just want to say, words cannot explain. Well, one, words cannot explain, can't explain how, like the, like 9.8, for example.
Yeah.
How you end up, you have to really plan out your movements because you don't, it there's no explanation of how long, like if you have to just, is there a definitive time for how long it takes? Like for the inversion to happen?
You're saying a 9.8?
Yeah, it's the one where Paul and Team Jump they're in a very simple platforming situation, but at certain points things get inverted.
Oh yes, this one where the gravity will turn on and off.
Yeah, it's I'm a little mad. I was a little mad that we're getting this stuff, like this, these types of puzzles, right before the end of the story.
Right. It really did feel like you were, it was just like shaking up what we had known. Like these were kind of the challenges. These were really like tests of how well do you know these characters? How well do you know these abilities? And I get what you mean. Like, it did feel like, oh, why'd you have to do these right before the end? That final chapter is really good in terms of puzzles.
Yeah, I personally wish that there was a Mario Maker type of Mario Maker like for this game.
That would be awesome. Mike Bithell, get on that. that would be really cool.
But let's talk about 9.9. Because
yeah.
This is the one I had a lot of trouble with.
So, like I had said, Gray manipulates Joe and Sam into helping him by saying he's trying to find a lost friend. Over time, they start to wonder if he's to be trusted. Paul goes on ahead of Team Jump, desperate to stop Gray. The four named characters meet up in the rain, and we once again confront the Pixel Cloud. It realizes it could pick off Paul and Gray easily during their confrontation, but stays unworried about Joe and Sam. Quote, they weren't going anywhere, it thinks. In the final moments of this penultimate level, the Pixel Cloud takes Gray and leaves Paul, perhaps in an act of mercy. Our final level sees Joe and Sam discovering the portal, presumably made possible by our AI hero team of old, and jumping in. They escape the system, and the emergence begins.
Yeah, when I got to the end of that moment where I got the trophy for beating the game or finishing the story, I just sat there and was just taking it all in because, as I said in the last episode, these are shapes.
Yeah.
They're just connected lines.
And I think that's a really good answer to, like, I had one of my questions I had written down. Oh, go ahead.
I like the, like a good answer to criticism of why would someone care about a game about shapes when you could just play
anything else?
a triple A first person puzzle game.
I mean, yes. And like, I was just going to be like, did you, I had written down, did you feel things you'd never felt before? Which is such a like corny, like weird way to put what I'm trying to say. But like, you know, this is the reason I wanted to start this show off with this game was not only just because it really kicked off what an indie game can be in a short amount of time, a story it can tell, but at the same time, it's so minimalist and it can make you feel out of something so small. Like we played this for maybe 3 hours tops. We
actually, I can, I have to. Okay. So the way I felt, this is it's a meme that basically captures how I felt after finishing it. You know the videos of cats achieving transcendence?
Yeah, I could picture that.
It was basically that. Like I was just like slouched back in my computer chair, just emotionless. And I just felt like I had just gone to a different world, different universe.
I love that. Like, I love that that's what this made you feel. Like, I think that's the more positive than crying as I did. But like, you know, to have that feel of you experienced something that was an experience, you know, like it was something new and fresh and exciting. And I mean, it's great that this holds up over 10 years later. And it's just, it's such a great thing. I was reminded again why I, like I said, went and installed it on my mom's phone. Like, I want to share this game with people. I think it's a great entry to what an indie can be, what one developer can do, what it's just what we can do as a medium. And just you put so much time and money and energy into games to make these huge things. Not saying that Mike Bithell didn't put time and money and energy into this. I'm just saying it was done differently. It was to make a passion project that withstands the test of time and really proves to anyone who plays it that we can do crazy cool things with not a lot of time like needed to play it, not a lot of like a big cast of people, like you had one narrator
and with barely any quote-unquote crazy tech.
Yeah just a couple of assets and just pictures and the basic knowledge of a physics engine. Like, this could have been something made in Game Maker or something, and it's fantastic.
Brayden, I want you to do this now because I want to see it. Check the Game of the Year doc.
I did. I was going to mention that you made it your...
What took so long?
What took so long? Yes. And I remember that, like, we did this recording and some days passed and you had done that. And I went and I told my fiance, I was like, I'm so happy that I started, that I finally were doing this indie book club. It means the world to me. And I love the fact that that game touched you because you had, I forget what you had had, but you had another game on there. And this impacted you in such a short amount of time, and that really was very, very special to see that. I'm very happy that you came away with that.
So said game was Control.
Ah. Wow. That's a big praise.
And now I'm thinking of trying, or I'm just mulling over the possibility, just thinking I should try Volume next.
Yeah, I remember, because I believe I have replayed this before. Maybe I haven't, but there was a time where I was like, I should try Volume. I don't think I'm going to make it an IBC game because it's a little different. I don't know if it's as story focused, but I remember it. I remember it having a cool gameplay mechanic, and that makes me want to give it a shot. I mean, I highly recommend Tron Identity as well, just with in terms of the story, and if you like visual novels or detective type stories, it's a really good, it's a very good one.
Oh, I didn't know that Andy Serkis was in Volume.
I didn't either. I didn't know there was anywhere that his skills could be used. Is there a narrator? Is there a... That's interesting.
So it's a Volume is a stealth action, like a cyberpunk stealth action game. And I'm on the Steam page for it, and it looks like it's got a nice isometric view, like point of view, and it's a very traditional type of stealth function where you're basically robbing from your, it's a Robin Hood story. You're teaching the poor how to rob the rich.
Oh, wow. So there is like a cool story to it. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I remember like seeing screen grabs of this, but I suck at stealth games, so maybe it wouldn't be for me. But I would definitely give it a shot. I mean, I think Mike Bithell is definitely a genius in terms of the...
It's $10 space. Right now.
I have it on PS Plus, I think. Like, I'm pretty sure I own it on Vita. So it's worth giving it a shot, but yeah. Let me see if I had any other little questions. All right, I'm gonna get meta for a sec.
Thomas knew he'd never meet Nathan Fillion.
That's my final question.
Or a Transformer.
Because okay. I forgot how Thomas was alone. City or
Eat It movies.
It didn't matter. I forgot going into it exactly what it was pertaining to and why you were doing what you were doing. And then it became apparent to me that they are AIs. And I liked the quote from the very beginning of the game. It was just an AI in the right place at the right time. And so my question for you was, can you see AI being helpful? Does this change how you see AI? Because, I mean, we're living in a world where it can be, I don't know, daunting. It can be a helpful thing. It can be...
So, in my opinion, it all depends on what it's being used for. So if it's being used to assisting with things, like assisting like with... Restoring things like video, audio. Like I have no problem with AI if it's in a support role, but if it's in a role of just replacing people,
yeah, that's where it gets to be.
That's after that. I can't willingly support it or support people using it.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they like recreate like a Star Trek or a Doctor Who or something with AI? They like brought back old, you shared it once, I think.
Oh, you mean the deepfakes?
Maybe it was like old lost content that they were able to like finish off with AI help.
Oh yeah, I think it had to do. I think So, I would take this opportunity to talk about Doctor Who because I rarely get a chance to anymore. So because Doctor Who started 60 years ago, the BBC had a very bad track record with archiving and preserving their video library, and they simply would use a tape to record an episode, air it, and then wipe it.
Jeez.
And there are some, like, I learned about this all, most of this due to the Lost Media community, and it is wild when you look at everything that has either been have you heard of a series or a thing in Britain called Blue Peter?
I have, actually. I don't know why, so, but yes.
It's the longest running children's television series, and they, aside from the first 5 years of Blue Peter, every episode after, it's like from year six on, is mostly accounted for, and it's there. They have such a good system of archiving that they end up, that most of the people working on Blue Peter were able to help find old Doctor Who or Doctor Who material believed to be lost or wiped. And what they do now is, because there's no for most of the stories from the first two doctors, one of the few things that survived was the audio for each episode. So select episodes from the first Doctor's era and the second Doctor's era have been animated. So instead of watching a video or watching a copy of let's just say the Faceless Men, or basically any most of the first of William Hartnell's era, you just see production photos, just images from the episode, like just static images. And now that the audio is mostly saved, they're just animating it so they can preserve to have a better way of preserving the older stories. So
That's very cool. It was used for good.
Yeah, like if you ever want to fall down a rabbit hole and just read everything and just look up, and you'll see the sun has already risen and it's already like 6 or 7 a.m. Just go on YouTube and search Lost Media.
Yeah. There's a lot of crazy stuff. And there's a Twitter that I follow that shows a lot of Lost Media and like tries to actually track them down and get these things that were just lost to time. And a lot of people are, possibly that might be it. And I've seen some people recently because, for example, HBO Max is taking down all of their animation that a lot of people think, oh, it's Lost Media now. I saw Foster's Home. Oh, it's Lost Media. And it's not, because it exists on, I mean, Apple still sells it. Probably Amazon. There's box sets some places. But, I mean, as time goes on, you look at something like the Willow series for Disney Plus. That's Lost Media now. They took that shit away. Like, have you seen the thing with, not to go down this rabbit hole, but Christopher Nolan has been on a big kick lately because...
Oh, yeah. Stop. Buy it on physical media. Stop letting don't let the rich people take it away from you.
Right. Like, he's got this hang-up that streaming services, rightfully so, the streaming services can just take, especially their own content, their original content, just take it away. And if we don't have box sets of, I don't know, Squid Game, like on Blu-ray or something, if that gets taken down, you're never seeing it again. And that's just wild. And I mean, you see it with, yeah, his big thing is like Oppenheimer. He's trying to make really good physical versions so that you can't ever get screwed out of it by streaming services. Anyway, that's a rabbit hole. But yeah, with AI, things that we've lost, I mean, there's a lot of children's shows like the Blue Peter thing. There's a lot of children's shows that have been just lost to time, which is crazy to me. Doctor Who is infamously a big one, I know, just because those first seasons were just gone.
Yeah, so there's actually this is the last thing I mentioned.
Yeah.
Inigo Popkins, or Hopkins. Inigo Pipkins. One of those. was a British series that was about the titular character who was a toy maker, and it was kind of like Toy Story, where the toys were sentient, and the lead actor who played Inigo passed away. But he had filmed episodes before his death, like a large amount of episodes. So BBC decided, I think it was BBC or Channel 4 or ITV, one of those three, decided to keep the series going. And basically, the handling of Inigo Pipkin's death on that series, if I'm correct, predates the stuff with Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street.
Oh wow!
Yeah, like that. This is stuff from the 60s, 70s, and then there's just things that are like modern day stuff that is just gone and will never be found again.
Yeah, it's wild.
You know what else was wild?
What?
Yeah, Thomas was alone.
It was.
It was quite as, the time. Or as my, or as the achievement I got said, Thomas was not alone.
That is, wait, really? That's the name for the ending?
That's okay. So for finishing the game, the Steam achievement is called Thomas was not alone.
That's awesome. I love that a lot.
Yeah, and then certain names for certain achievements are just very funny. Like dying 100 times, I got the achievement huge success. Starting a generation, I got the achievement electric boogaloo. And then winter's coming for iterate. This game truly is something. It truly is something else.
Well, I'm very happy that you enjoyed it, and I'm very happy that we got to talk about it. I'm happy that we got to play it again. And I had the idea of a special treat for you, but I don't know if it's going to work out. if it won't, I'll make a tweet about it. However, I was looking around online because I don't know if you are aware that this game has a DLC. It has a 20 level DLC, like two more chapters called Benjamin's Flight. And I remembered liking it, and I knew that you liked this game. My only issue is it's not available on Steam anymore. So I was looking it up, and Thomas Was Alone is available on PS Plus for free, which, like, everybody, it says it's in the extra category, which I don't know exactly what that one is, but you should be able to access it for free. If not, it's only $3. Alan, I just sent you $4.
Okay.
What I'm getting at is I want you to buy Benjamin's Flight. The reason that this may not work out is because I can't tell if it unlocks after you beat the game, in which case I don't want you to have to play the whole game again. That would just be overkill for you. So give it a shot, and if it doesn't work out, I will tweet about it. So this podcast will end on a cliffhanger, I guess. If we end up seeing you again in another episode, we've played Benjamin's Flight. And
okay. So,
oh, I hope it works.
Not that, or not just that. There's actually, it's not a scenario in which it's not on Steam. It's already in the game.
Out. It's in the game for free?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I was gonna bring this up after we finished recording. I was like, wait, are we still? If we're doing 5 through 9, what about the 10th one? And after that?
No, so they were locked for you.
Chapter ten was, so chapter 11 is locked. I have to beat chapter 10 to.
Okay, so now you have 10 unlocked because you beat it.
Yeah, so I'll send you back that money.
Hell, you can keep it for all you want. But that means if you're willing to play two more chapters, then this is a Thanksgiving miracle. And we will play Benjamin's Flight. Little intro, Benjamin's Flight is a prequel chapter. It takes place, I believe, before Thomas, like, even, like, appears, like, that whole thing. And it's a whole new character.
It's just your delete. Does it do the Disney thing where it just ends, like, with the Star Wars things stuff, where, like, it would end where stop as
the
main game picks up?
Possibly. I want to say no. I think it's a self-contained story, but I really don't remember it. From what I've seen online, people don't think of it as fondly. People don't think it's as great. I don't know. It's like, to me, it's 20 more levels of a new character with a new challenge and some more stuff to talk about.
Then I'm down to play.
Awesome. Then, if you're listening at home and have played Thomas's Alone, I'm sorry that, I mean, here's how I'll say it. If you haven't played Thomas's Alone yet, this is going to go up probably Friday, and there's currently a sale going on PlayStation. It's only $3, as well as being, I think, free on PS Plus. Benjamin's Flight is only $3.50. It's not on sale, but it's only ever $3.50. Totally worth it. Or if you get it on Steam, which I think it's 50% off right now, you apparently get the DLC included, which is awesome. That's sick. So yeah, join us in, we'll get back to you, geez, next Sunday, we can say. And I'm stoked. We're gonna play more of this. It ain't over yet. But yes, thank you all for listening and just enjoying the game with us. It's a wonderful, like, the game itself is done. It was wonderful. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I hope you at home enjoyed it. And we will see you next time for Benjamin's Flight. Alan, thank you for joining me.
No problem. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. I feel like I'm ending this abruptly, but I mean, I was done with questions. We had a real good conversation. Did you have any more to say?
By the game, you're gonna have a good time.
There you go.
This is coming from the person who has said on multiple Players Club episodes that they despise puzzles.
Yeah, you're really not a puzzle gamer at all. You've never really enjoyed them, but I'm very happy that this has given you a taste of how fun a puzzle game can be. And we will see you next time with Benjamin's Flight. Let's get back to the game.